miles of black ribbon on the lone highway. Men turn into boys on the lone highway. Rest up creeps die on the lone highway. Pretty girls beware out on the lone highway. On the lone highway. Honey, on the lone highway. Left me for another on the lone highway. They killed Dirty Dog McGee on the lone highway. Stroked a little girl's hair on the lone highway. On the lone highway.
Hello and welcome to Operation Scorpio. Today's date is Saturday, April 17, 2021. We're cooking through April, guys. And welcome to the free-range open-air insane asylum we call Earth. Well, guys, here we are. Here we are watching the reality we live in being torn apart by lies, lies stacked upon lies, and we are living in a dying empire, and an empire being consumed from within by a cabal of global parasites, also known as the International Jew, eating away at everything like termites. Like termites. What was once a strong foundation is quickly being reduced to sawdust. And it's kind of funny, guys. You know, just this morning I was thinking about Tex Mars and what a great truth teller he was, a great man in many ways. You know, I don't have to agree with a bit of his personal religious philosophy to respect the man. But I was just thinking this morning how, you know, nobody could say the Jews quite like Tex Mars could. He had a special way of saying it that was pretty good. And, you know, I used to listen to Tex back. I first heard of him back in the 90s, early 90s. And I used to listen to cassette tapes of his shows. Cassette tapes. Wow. That ages me there. That dates me. I don't even know if cassette tapes exist anymore. Maybe they do, I don't know. But anyway, you know, we really are witnessing this self-immolation of a crumbling media empire as well, aren't we? You know, the enemy war transmissions known as the mainstream media news are inadvertently becoming comedy. You know, a theater of the absurd. And it's kind of getting to the point where the nightly news needs to be accompanied by, you know, a rim shot like at a comedy club, you know, every couple of sentences. It's amazing. COVID numbers reach a new high. Ba-dum-tsh, right? The experimental vaccines have been proven to be safe and effective. Ba-dum-tsh. Yeah, guys, it's science. Trust the science. But yeah, you know, if you watch clips of the news, all I can take are, you know, 5-minute clips before I get nauseous. But you end up laughing at the absurdity of the lies. And what always strikes me too is the irony of how not a single word of what they tell the general public is true. Not a single word. That's ironic. And, you know, it's amazing how every word these people say has been constructed very carefully to psychologically manipulate the viewer, the choice of words, the cadence, all of it. You know, there's a whole, group of consulting psychologists that edit every single news script that comes out. So one thing I'm seeing is there's kind of some conflicting information, but one thing I'm seeing is that the COVID narrative really is falling apart. It's crumbling from within and kind of unraveling like a cheap sweater. You know, I was just watching a clip of the so-called news, and, you know, they talked about this 91-year-old woman who just died of COVID. 91. Yeah. Another life snuffed out due to COVID. But of course, you know, very few people even make it to 91, but nope, COVID got her. And then the other victim they talked about was like this black guy in his mid-60s. Seriously, the guy was 100 pounds overweight minimum. I'm being kind. This guy was just massively fat. But he died of COVID, not because of, you know, hypertension, heart disease, diabetes. Nope, it was COVID, guys. They really are scraping the bottom of the barrel here to keep this narrative going about the deadly pandemic. It's really quite amazing. Yeah. And isn't it interesting how, you know, we have to be reminded 24/7 of how terrible COVID is, don't we? I mean, guys, if this pandemic was really that serious, we wouldn't need to be reminded of it 24 hours a day, would we? You know? I mean, if bodies were stacking up on the streets like firewood, I think, you know, we'd notice, and the gravity of this pandemic would become self-evident, wouldn't it? But that's simply not the case. So yeah, the lies are astounding. And I think they're pushing the limits to their credibility now. I really do. We're hitting the wall in terms of the credibility these people have amongst even the normies. It's common, guys. And as the old saying goes, once bitten, twice shy. It's going to be hard to regain that trust once people start to figure out what's really going on. And it was kind of funny, you know, guys, yesterday I was walking down the street, minding my own business. And there's a nunnery just outside of a little town nearby where I live. And, when I was walking by this nun, you know, elderly nun walks out of the gates there, and, you know, very politely, she asked me, well, hey, how come you're not wearing a mask? And I'll tell you guys, I'm not going to be rude to a nun ever. I'm not going to suck a turd in hell for that one. Okay. But seriously, I'm not going to be rude to a nun. So she asked me very politely, you know, why aren't you wearing a mask? And I said to her, no necesito, Dios me proteja. You know, I don't need one. God will protect me. And it was interesting. You know, I think I caught her off guard, and she kind of paused and looked at me for a moment, and she lowered her mask and smiled at me. It was kind of beautiful in a way, because she had to agree with me once she thought about it. She had to agree with me. There was no way she could argue given her position in life. So that was kind of cool. Anyway, you know, we're dealing with liars that lie so much, they forget the lie they just told. You know, they can't keep their story straight. And I'm sure everyone out there listening has dealt with somebody like that in real life. You know, just someone that lies so consistently, they can't remember, they can't keep their lies straight, right? And there comes a point where you just don't take them seriously anymore. Anything they say is just, you write it off as bullshit. That's what's happening to our media now, slowly but surely, but they don't see it. They're too arrogant to look at themselves in that way. And honestly, I don't know why anyone believes a word these clowns tell us anymore. I really don't. And I think the root cause is people's innate trust in authority figures. You know, we've been conditioned and taught to trust the authorities. But of course, now that relationship is being abused. And it's being abused to the point where it can never be repaired again once people start to see the deception. There's no going back, guys. And the other thing, too, is I'm just struck with all the half-truths that we're being told about, you know, these shootings, this massive shootings. There's shootings every 15 minutes. You know, it's amazing. And then what, we went through 4 years of almost no shootings. And then all of a sudden there's 3 shootings a week. And Groper Joe called it an epidemic. We have another epidemic on our hands, guys. And isn't it a little cringe every time you hear the term President Biden? God. And really, Biden is so symbolic of a dying empire, isn't he? This feeble old man, an old criminal who's been lying his entire life, and he can't remember his own lies anymore. Very symbolic, isn't it? But yeah, you know, these half-truths about these police shootings too. You know, last night, Giuseppe came across on his show. He had this at the opening, this video of this little Dante, I guess Dante Wright, I think his name is. Anyway, Dante, little thug. And he came across this video of him, you know, waving his pistol around and pointing it sideways like they do. Just acting totally gangsterish, man. You know, totally gangster. And, of course, the mainstream media paints him as a saint. And he was a father. He was a father. And the kind of guy that could make anybody laugh. But that's not the real story. This kid had been charged with aggravated assault. And he was out on bail on some kind of a weapons charge. So this kid was no stranger to problems with the law. And obviously this kid was involved in some kind of illegal activity like drug dealing, for instance. I mean, you know, he's driving a brand new Toyota, a $40,000 car. Come on, guys. I don't think he was working as an engineer or something. Oh, it's good to see Snips in the chat there. Glad you're doing good, Snips. And man, and the other thing, this shooting, you know, of the Dante, if it even happened, you know, I don't know if it even really happened, because you have to look at these media events from maybe different perspectives. Because first of all, if you watch the video carefully, there was no gunshot sound, you know, none. And as far as I know, gunshots are pretty loud, but the rest of the audio on the footage is quite clear. Why wasn't there a gunshot? And if you watch carefully, the pistol of this woman cop, it doesn't retract. You know, the slide doesn't go back and then retract to reload the next bullet, you know, like a semi-automatic pistol does. Another thing is there's no smoke. I mean, she essentially shot him inside the car. You would have seen some smoke come out of that gun. And the other weird thing is, why would she have to tell her fellow officers that she shot Dante. I think they would have heard it. Pretty obvious when a gun goes off that, you know, hey, I shot him. Well, yeah, we heard the gunshot, but no. The whole thing's very strange. But either way, whether these events are, you know, scripted with actors, which is possible, I'd like some answers to those questions. And of course, it turns out that what there is a relationship between actors or the people in this event and the George Floyd thing. I guess George Floyd's girlfriend was Dante's teacher or something like that. So it's just awfully strange that the two, you know, events overlap in a way. What are the chances of that? But either way, if it's, maybe it was real, maybe the kid really was shot, but either way, I have serious doubts about that, guys. But either way, you know, we're being told half truths about the characters in the play, let's say. You know, anything that doesn't fit the narrative, the innocent black child being killed by the evil police, is left out of the narrative. And of course, let's not forget the kid, you know, broke away from the cops while he was being cuffed. Let's not leave out that little fact. And believe me, I'm no fan of the cops, man. I think the cops are out of control in general, not just towards innocent black boys. But hey, you know, conversely, cops get jaded, man. I mean, imagine dealing with the absolute lowest scum of society every single day you go to work. It's going to get you jaded. It's just human nature. But the whole structure of policing has gone into a militarized police state, and it's got nothing to do with race. I don't think I've ever had a really pleasant interaction with the police, maybe a few times, but it's not like a cop's ever said, hey, you're white, I'm going to be nice to you, man. Doesn't work like that. And everyone knows that. But on TV, it's different. But the big picture here is we're supposed to react emotionally to these events, whether they're scripted or real. We're supposed to react emotionally, and that's supposed to alter our behavior and our belief system. That's the important thing here, guys. React with emotions to things you see on TV. But I really do think we're hitting a critical mass here. The mainstream media is losing people's trust, and they've earned it. They've earned it, guys. And I was just looking, you know, at some of the stats on these mainstream media news shows recently. I mean, their viewing is plummeting, guys. Some of the mainstream primetime news shows have like 1 million or 2 million viewers. That's nothing. That's nothing, guys. I mean, there's guys with YouTube channels making videos in their basements that have more views than that. And these are, you know, multi-million dollar operations. Yeah, falling apart, guys. And here's another question. Can a civilization based on lies keep standing? I mean, how long does a civilization where everything the public is told is a lie, how long can that civilization live? That's something to really ask ourselves, because we're in the thick of that right now. Yeah. A lot of good stuff in the chat room here, man, at Revolution Radio. Good stuff, guys. It's nice to see people chatting things that are really insightful and people that are thinking. Good stuff, man. But I think the bottom line is we're going to have a lot of really angry people out there pretty soon as more and more people figure out that everything they've been told on the television is a lie. And I don't think you get that trust back ever. Once someone wakes up from that kind of deception, anger is a normal human reaction. But make no mistake, guys, the ultimate goal of this cabal right now is depopulation. By hook or by crook, they're going to do it. And whether it's by this mass vaccination program or some other means, they've gone too far and they will stop at nothing to achieve this goal. They'll stop at nothing. And we got to see now that governments around the world have become the enemy. We need to give up these old illusions that somehow the government is going to help us. This cabal runs all of the governments, at least in the Western world for sure. And I'm convinced they've cut some kind of deal with China to put them in the catbird seat, in the pole position in the future. So I really think, you know, as this COVID narrative kind of falls apart, they're going to do all they can to keep it going, but expect crisis after crisis to come our way. You know, and here we are living through these mass shootings after 4 years, what, of almost none? What, within a month of Groper Joe taking the office? They got two or three a week going now, but it's all real. And, you know, either it's mind-controlled patsies that are being activated because, you know, they all conveniently seem to kill themselves just about. Or if these are scripted events, hard to know. But all we do know for sure is that we are being lied to. We're being manipulated. And we're supposed to react emotionally to all of these events. And these emotions are supposed to control our behavior and our perception of reality. And as new crises unfold, we need to remember that these are being done on purpose, part of a greater plan cooked up by the forces of world government to get the Goyim herd, the Goyim cattle, ready for slaughter. Those aren't kind words, but that is the reality we are facing. So don't forget, as these things unfold, this is being done on purpose. Let us never forget that. And, you know, always take a moment to imagine the world we could be living in without this constant meddling and manipulation by the covert forces of global government. We could live in such a different reality without this force of government. And we've been brainwashed into thinking we have to have government, a strong government to exist. Time to imagine a different reality. And the time to fight is coming. It's coming. We're near it. But I'll say this, you know, I'm not saying we need to initiate violence. No, we do not. It will be brought to us because war has been declared on us, guys. Every man, woman, and child that refuses this new system is going to be targeted for elimination. And right now we're in the stage where society is just sort of being softened up and fattened up, you know, just like you do with, you know, cattle before you slaughter them. You get them fattened up first, getting us weak and fat. it's amazing all the talk we hear about trans rights and gay rights, and anything weak and degenerate is being brought to the forefront right now, isn't it? And, you know, I keep thinking about one of the scenes in the classic Disney movie, Pinocchio, you know, the 1930s animated classic. And I think in the 1930s, it was before elements of the deep state really took over Disney. And now what, Disney's completely taken over by Jews. Let's be honest. That's who's running Disney now, guys. And Disney's just been made into another tentacle of the global homo empire. The garbage that Disney cranks out for young people and children now is nothing short of disgusting. And really, you know, this would be a whole show, really, but, you know, Disney really started to be taken over by elements of the deep state during World War II, when it was made into a war propaganda vehicle. And after the war, those forces never completely left Disney. But anyway, you know, Pinocchio was a timeless classic. And man, just from an artistic standpoint, that movie is just phenomenal. I mean, I don't even think you could produce something on that level today. The animation, the background work, all of it is just, I don't think you could do it. I don't think you could replicate that movie today in terms of just the technical skill involved and the man hours it took to make that movie. It's amazing. And I say that as someone, you know, I've been involved in the arts and as a professional artist for, you know, 20 years. And if you look at the quality of that artwork, it's off the chart. But anyway, the scene I keep getting reminded of is the scene, you know, where Pinocchio and some other young boys, interesting, are lured into this wonderful amusement park. Remember this, guys? They get lured into this amusement park by this Svengali-like character. They go to the park, and it's so much fun. And everything's free, guys. Free roller coaster rides, right? Bright lights, free candy, free food, even free beer. It's amazing. They can't believe how much fun they're having. And then what happens? Slowly, they start turning into donkeys. Yeah. They slowly turn into donkeys and become beasts of burden and are sold into slavery. Right? The whip cracks and they are forever slaves. Forever slaves. Tricked through their own self-indulgence. And I think that's where we are headed right now in this society. We are being tricked by our own self-indulgence. And the big question at hand here, guys, is do we figure out the game before it's too late? Or does the whip crack and we become beasts of burden, donkeys? Something to think about. Great graphic Giuseppe just found. Vaccines are safe and effective. Yeah. Okay, that said, guys, I want to bring on my co-host and my main man and a guy who's not afraid to name those behind the international cabal, Mr. Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Giuseppe, how's it going, man? How are you?
Living the dream, brother. Living the dream. Yeah, man. Great intro. I don't know if people realize just how much Walt Disney despised the Jew. That's why I used to really like Disney.
Tell us more. That's interesting. You're right. Tell us more.
Well, he was. He knew what a. What a satanic malignancy the Jew was, and he prevented them from any power on his board of directors. He banned them. He would not allow stock sales to Jews. He blocked hostile takeovers of his company a couple times, and he would he didn't judge the average animator, you know, if you were Jewish or not. He didn't care. Well, much the way reality is, you know, the Jew that owns the corner deli, you know, they may be sighing him, which is the secret traitor to the country they're in, but many of them are just, you know, Americans, which you got to give them the benefit of the doubt. And but he really despised the international Jew. He was like Henry Ford. He saw it all for what it was.
Yeah, that's a good point. And he also, you know, he ran a pretty tight ship for the people that worked at the firm. They didn't put up with, you know, people that were immoral or acting strange or anything. You were out if you started doing weird shit there, man. I've read a few books about that. And really, things didn't start to, you know, the deep state started to make their way into the Disney Corporation during World War II. And that's where intelligence operatives and such started to worm their way into the field. But yeah, they kept Disney a pretty good force for many number of years after that. And look what it's become now. I mean, it's completely run by the international Jew, and the garbage they pump out for young kids and you know, teenagers is just, it's disgusting. It's just garbage. No value at all.
Right. I'm seeing if I have another great cartoon set up to put in here. Yeah, here it is. This is how the satanic malignancy that is the international Jew with their minions, the radical Bolshevik 2.0 Jew, this is how they're shifting the Overton window. This is what started in the 70s, and this is where they're going. They started, you know, in the 70s with gay rights, and that went through the 80s, 90s, and slowly, oh, those poor gays, even though, and it's true, there's a lot of decent, we have gay friends who have kids, and they love their kids, and, you know, they don't touch them or anything, but statistically, it's a risk, because so many do. And so now we're in the era, the last decade or so, of trans rights. And this is so absurd because transgenderism is two main components. It's the bad genetic wiring of an individual who is so sure they're in the wrong body, and it just eats at their anus. You know, it's like a bug chewing at their butt constantly. They can't get over it. You know, they lack the spiritual discipline, and so they have to mutilate their body. That's the one, that's the lower percentage of transgenderism. The higher percentage is the intentional poisoning by the international Jew with all kinds of estrogen and estrogen mimics to feminize the first world population and foment the mental illness that is the cross-dresser, that is the Dick Levines of the world, and that big 6'3" goof cross-dresser who Biden appointed as assistant director of the Department of Education, whatever his official title is. That's mental illness. So those are the two main prongs of transgenderism. I mean, there are people like like Sonny and Cher's daughter, who now named Chastity is now Chaz Bono. I mean, I guess you got to do what you got to do. My wife went to high school with a very gifted artist that was just so sure that she had to become a he, and he did. You know, I mean, I can't imagine going through all that surgery and all that, because this life is so brief. And if you have spiritual discipline, you real spiritual discipline, you use it and you overcome that. I mean, I don't think the divine makes any mistakes. So
exactly. That's right. And of course, the last caption in the little cartoon you got there is pedo rights. That's the end game.
That's what the international Jew, the vile satanic Talmudic wants. That's what they want, and that's in the Talmud over and over again. That's in the Mishnah that is so vile they don't even put it into print. There's spoken satanic marching orders. I mean, it's so disgusting that. And yet, look at who's in power in this world using the strategic cancer that is usury. So
right, and they've already got the pump primed for, you know, if you're against pedo rights, then you're a hater. And look how they're using this thing with little kids have the right to decide if they want to change gender, and we'll mutilate their genitals and give them hormones and puberty blockers. It's all part of their rights. And if you think about that, how far of a leap is it to say, well, hey, you know, a little kid can decide to have sex if they want to. It's not a very big step. And that's exactly where they plan on taking it, man. I agree.
That is so satanically evil, and why it is in the best interest of humanity to eliminate the Jew from any participation in power or leadership in this world, and, you know, allow them to live in their kibbutzes, allow them to run a deli, allow them to, but they must not be allowed to hold elective office. They must not be allowed any position of power and finance, and that will solve every one of the world's great problems.
It'd be a good start, that's for sure. And, Stipitz sent me an article by Fritz Springmeier about Disney. And one thing that's interesting about Disney is they really tried to corrupt him on multiple levels through time. Disney was in a very precarious position because he created something that was so huge that, these dark forces wanted to take it. And so they put many things in Walt Disney's path to try to corrupt him and make him into a very different person. It's quite an interesting story, the whole story of Disney and what happened to him and what happened to the company after he passed and stuff. It's like a mafia movie almost. It's really interesting.
Yeah, it is. I mean, here's a perfect example of, I don't know if you've seen that documentary about Disneyland and Walt Disney had a little secret apartment, and he had a little window he could open, and he derived great joy from watching all the kids go around and just the euphoria in their eyes and their actions of just totally enjoying Disneyland. And Disney did it all for kids. He loved kids. And now you can just know that those satanic Jews are using that little secret apartment to sodomize 3-year-olds. So it's
And he lived in that apartment. Oddly, he lived in that apartment more than he lived in his own house.
Right.
He was really in. He worked very hard. One thing that's really true about Disneyland, there really are secret tunnels underneath Disneyland. You know, I have a friend that worked for Disneyland for many, many years. And the stories of those tunnels are real. And some of them are just used for storage and fairly, you know, innocuous purposes. But there's tunnels that go deeper under the facility that only a small number of people are allowed to have access to.
That's correct.
It's pretty weird.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I mean, they used to use a lot of that stuff to move the actors around and surprise people by, like, having, instead of, you know, the big goofy actor with his costume having to walk through and get mauled, they would use those tunnels to move them from the north end to the south end and things like that. But who knows what those Jews are doing with those tunnels now, that's for sure.
Yeah, and then there's the infamous 33 Club that's
right
there at Disneyland too.
Yeah.
So, it's the thing is, when something that big is created by somebody. You know, we live in a world where it's going to be co-opted by these dark forces.
So true. And
yeah, I don't know how it just seems to be built into the game right now. And I think we need to be aware of that. And it goes to the bigger picture of like, hey, you know, don't think that the military is going to come save us. Not going to happen. They've been co-opted a long time ago. You know, he who pays the piper calls the tune. And, you know, I was just watching this thing about how they're training the military, you know, about extremism and white supremacism. I mean, they're all going through this essentially a mind control brainwashing program. And it was so absurd. Again, it goes back to the comedy of the mainstream media. They're even learning about the dangers of Pepe the Frog. I had to laugh about that one, man.
I love the fact that the alt-right and the far-right are just masters of humor and memes. And you look at on the left and the Bolsheviks, they have nothing. They have no ability to use satire. And whatever they produce is so heavy-handed and vicious and mean-spirited. And yet every day I find something that makes me cackle out loud because I love clever, biting dark humor like that. And the people who do that on the right and the far right are just masters at it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, part of the problem, too, is the people on the left, everything's offensive. So they can't do anything that's funny anymore because you're not allowed to laugh at anything because you're going to offend somebody or hurt someone's feeling. So that's part of the problem they face is their own limitations. And in this little segment I saw, they're instructing, you know, people in the military, if someone uses Pepe the Frog in a tweet or on their Facebook page, they're being instructed to delete them as a friend and don't communicate with them again because they're probably a white supremacist.
It is truly clown world, man. You know, where the clowns win and Whitey loses, as I said in my opening yesterday on the Perfect Triangle.
Yeah. Hey, where did you come across that that footage of that little thug, Dante? Well, how did you find that with him waving his pistol around, pointing it sideways like the gangsters do?
Oh, I do not reveal my sources, Scorpio, publicly.
It's classified.
Got to stay ahead of the competition. But it's out there. I mean, it's easily found if true investigators who know how to use the internet know how to find that stuff. And I've learned to be one of those investigators.
Yeah, well, that was good stuff, man. And it really showed like just the difference between how the kid actually behaves. You know, he made that video to share with his friends or whatever, and show off about what a gangster he was. And then here you have the media saying he was a father, and he could make anyone laugh, and just basically a saintly little kid. Never did nothing. Didn't do nothing. Didn't do nothing. It's just amazing how they don't care about the truth. They just want to construct everything to fit whatever narrative they're trying to push upon the people. And then you get these half-truths, and then you're supposed to react to it all emotionally, and it's supposed to change your perception of reality. It's incredible.
Well, you found a whopper that you shared after the show last night that the lying Jews at CBS News airbrushed out a handgun in one of these thug Negroes to make him look like a victim when he got shot. Can you believe that is gaslighting? That is outright mind control deception by those vile parasites.
Well, yeah, I think this kid, I forget his name, started with a T, 13-year-old Hispanic kid, but he had a gun, and he was with a 21-year-old, and they were running from the cops in Chicago. And according to the cops, one of the kids took a shot at the cops as they were running. So obviously the cops are just in full adrenaline mode.
Sure.
And they're leaving all of this out of the narrative, And of course, the kid he was with, the 21-year-old, they showed a picture of him, obvious gangster. And what they do is they, you know, they groom 13-year-olds to become gang members. And he's out there earning his bones, you know, earning his chops. And that's what was going on. But of course, no, he was just this innocent child, never did anything wrong. But here they were running from the cops, and they, you know, they both had guns.
Well, viewers and listeners may or may not realize that MS-13, which was created by Ollie North and the Jews who operated with impunity under Reagan in the 80s and totally savaged several of the Central American nations and put all the freedom fighters in prison, and they formed a survival alliance called MS-13. Now MS-13 is intentionally allowed to operate all over the United States. There's a big cell here in Bolshevik 2.0, Northern Virginia. And how you make your bones and become a full member of MS-13 is you have to murder someone. And every fucking month in the local papers, they arrest some bunch of MS-13 teenagers for murdering someone. And that's why the internationalist Jew needs to go, because they are allowing this to happen, and they are like a cancer in this government, and that is controlled mayhem by those satanic subhumans.
Yeah, and I guess there's been rioting going on in Chicago and now in Minnesota. And of course, it's all right on schedule. The timing is just perfect, because, you know, within a week or so, you're going to have the verdict of the George Floyd trial, as bogus as that whole thing is. I mean, there's so many different layers of deception within the narrative there. You know, depends if you look at it, are these all actors, or did this actually happen, but we're being told half truths? Either way, the deception's phenomenal. And, you know, it looks like this guy, you know, ate a whole baggie full of fentanyl meth pills that he bought from, you know, the other guy that was in the car with him, George Floyd, you know, this other guy that was his drug dealer. And, you know, the judge isn't making the drug dealer testify. The defense wanted him to testify, and the judge said no, because it would open up the door for, look, this guy's a drug dealer, and he sold George Floyd street pills that are supposed to mimic OxyContin, but they're really fentanyl and meth. That's why he had fentanyl and meth in his system, of course, which is a perfect recipe for cardiac arrest, because you have the fentanyl telling your heart to slow down and the meth telling it to speed up. You don't have to be a doctor to figure out that that's probably not a real good mix.
Oh, I got the autopsy toxicology report of St. Floyd of fentanyl. Let me see if I can find it. Yeah, in addition, he had where is it? When did I? It's got to be right here. But yeah, I mean, how can you know that dude, George Floyd, was a lowlife, a subhuman ghetto thug. He robbed a woman, beat her, put a loaded pistol in a 7-month plump pregnancy belly, you know, just terrorizing. And what would that do? The mother, what is that doing to that baby? And then, you know, he moves on and he starts making pornos. And I mean, and it's like, and then, as I said in my show intro yesterday, and now the pedophile, the child public molester, sneakily pinching the nipples, groper Joe Biden, pedo Joe Biden, is on record as saying that St. Floyd of fentanyl has done more for the civil rights movement than Brother Martin Luther King did.
Oh, makes sense, Giuseppe. I believe it. Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Just think, if he had lived, he may have come up with a cure for cancer. We can only imagine what he might have accomplished, man. You know, it's amazing too that I was watching a little bit of, you know, description from the enemy war transmissions, the mainstream media news, about this so-called trial. And they had this guy say that the amount of meth in his system was consistent with a doctor's prescription.
Of course.
So it's like, wait a minute, doctors prescribe crystal meth? Wow, who knew? You know, so don't look over here, look over there. It's perfectly normal to have fentanyl and meth in your system. No big deal. And this, it's incredible too how the judge is just you know, making sure that the jury is only getting, you know, one half of the story.
Oh, it's so rigged, just like James Tracy's trial. We got to get him back. He said he'd come on a show. And Jim, oh, cool. Jim Fetzer's you know, corrupt trial. Jim Fetzer should have been exonerated easily, and instead he even lost his appeal.
Yeah.
And so that is just so corrupt. I mean, you know, that there's two kinds of justice in Jumerica. There's the judge who somewhat has a sense of fairness for a civil suit, and then there's the judiciary who will act upon instruction for cases like the dude, the corrupt judge in Jim's case, who got a promotion to some state or federal post and promptly retired because he knew that he was a marked man and an unbelievable corrupt Jewish rectum licker.
Yeah. And, you know, Fake World in the chat is pointing out that, you know, the Minneapolis settled a civil suit with the Floyd family for $27 million ahead of the trial. Oh, I mean, geez. It's like saying, hey, you're guilty, man, before the trial even starts. I mean, that's unprecedented. But, you know, again, all the rules are out the window. They just want to push this narrative. And I don't know. It's possible that he'll be there'll be a hung jury or something like that, because it only takes one vote of not guilty, and then, you know, there's time to burn Minneapolis down. I don't know. Where do you think it's going to go?
I think that did you see the image? I found the Floyd image though. Let me open that one up. Did you see the image I used in my intro yesterday that had a bunch of the chimps chimping out on top of a squad car? And it was a split panel meme, and it said found guilty, and the same picture, found innocent. They're going to chimp out either way. That's what the Jew handlers want them to do.
Right, because, you know, the other possibility is he'll be convicted on a lesser charge, because, you know, to convict him of murder, you know, they're going to have to show that he meant to kill this guy.
Yeah.
And I don't think you can do that in any kind of reasonable, you know, evaluation of what happened.
Okay. Listen to this, Scorpio, and listeners and viewers. The autopsy found 90% blocked right coronary artery. That's a walking massive heart attack. 75% blocked left coronary artery. That's a massive heart attack waiting to happen. Because his heart had to work so hard, he had severe hypertension, which means the heart's pumping so hard. He was found to have a lethal dose of fentanyl in his system. He had already killed himself. I don't know if you saw that video in the convenience store where he's hopping around and so jittery and edgy and out of it. He also had meth, crystal meth in his system. He also had caffeine, which is also going to enhance the effect on the body. And then it's just funny that he was COVID-19 positive. Who cares?
On top of all that.
But the it was either the COVID or the cop that killed him. I mean,
well, it should have been it's a clear case of COVID killed him, man.
Right,
come on.
Exactly.
I mean, it's so deadly.
That's the lie, man. That's the lie.
Yeah, amazing. And, you know, these pills, apparently he had a whole baggie of these pills, and he ate the whole baggie before he got dragged out of his car. Jeez. And, you know, as I was saying earlier, these pills are street drugs where they press together fentanyl and meth together into a pill, and the meth is supposed to help you stay awake because right. The fentanyl is so powerful. And that guy that was in the car next to him was his drug dealer.
the you know, amazing, man, all our efforts to draw him out. Tony the Rat is in the chat, man. He's come and he just told Han to shut your mouth and get your shot. All right, Fauci in the house. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a joke, Scorpio. And, you know, I wonder if there's some type of subliminal messaging of control in all this social media for the weak-minded sheeple that they are so willing to believe these lies, so unable to step back, critically think at a eighth grade level. That's all you need. An eighth grader should be able to figure this all out and see who the real malignant enemy of mankind is, and they can't do it. They can't do it.
Well, okay, welcome back to hour number two of Operation Scorpio. And this hour, we're going to have a conversation with a fellow radio host here at Revolution Radio. Mark Snyder is going to be coming on. And Giuseppe, do you have Mark's Skype?
Yeah, he is invisible, but let me see if I can add him anyway.
No, he said he's standing by.
Oh, he's standing by. All right.
He's standing by.
I'm going to bring in the amazing guitar phenom known as Mark Snyder. Here, there he is, Mr. Mark Snyder.
How are you guys today?
Okay, Mark, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Sounds great.
All right, great. Well, hey, man, I just want to start off by thanking you for coming on. And why don't you start off, man, and just tell us a little bit about yourself and when your show is and stuff like that.
I'm getting a weird playback echo. Oh, I wonder if that could be me. Just a minute, guys. Sorry.
You got to turn off the whatever, yeah. However you were listening. Yeah.
I got to stop listening when I'm on the air, right?
Because, yeah, you'll hear it twice, man. The show's so nice, you want to hear it twice.
Yeah, you can't get enough. That's all there is to it.
Yeah.
Okay, you guys want to hear a little bit about who I am or what I am?
Yeah, lay it on us.
Yeah.
Yeah, give us the scoop, man, the down low.
All right. Been 25 plus years, 30 years as a software engineer. Right now I work for a software company in Columbus, and we do software mostly that helps utility companies assign people when, you know, we have power outages on the grid. They use our software to help go find technicians and call technicians. And we also, like Boeing and some other big airlines, are starting to use our software as well. So that's my day job. In the evenings, I play guitar here locally. I've got a wood flute player who plays with me, and sometimes the cellist. And usually we do that once or twice a month, mostly at a nice little restaurant in Zanesville called Urban Comforts. And I don't know how long I've been doing this radio show now, 10, 15 years. I have a blog talk show, and I do the Revolution Radio thing. And about 10, 15 years ago, I got real interested in the whole exopolitics and UFOs and extraterrestrials and that sort of thing. And there was one particular case which really caught my eye, which really I kind of dropped everything else as far as the radio show and started focusing on this one case in Switzerland. And a lot of people think it's a total hoax, but it's the Billy Meyer case. And if you guys want to go that direction, I certainly would be interested in telling you about it. But I don't know if you guys want to talk about the current crisis with the vaccine. That's certainly.
Oh, I've studied the Billy Meyer case in his life extensively. That is fascinating.
Really? Yeah,
quite familiar with Billy Meyer stuff, but I would just say, quite honestly, I'm a little skeptical of some of it. There's some I've studied the Billy Meyer case for probably 20 years.
Yeah, me
oh,
too.
Oh, really? Awesome. Do you have any of the books, like the Mind of Thoughts or the Way to Live or the Psyche or the Talmud of Emmanuel or
the big Goblet? The big coffee table book?
Goblet of Truth.
Yeah. Well, who put that out? The husband and wife team with the big giant pictures in it and stuff, you know. And I've read some of his.
Oh, you're talking about the they. What is it called? They still fly, or and they fly. That's the oh man, the guy from Switzerland that wrote the book about Billy. His name is just. I was just looking at the book 2 minutes ago.
There's a good chance his name is Sven.
Hang on.
Yeah, Scorpio. Billy Myers is. You know, to me, anyone who can not get caught in lies, there's something going on there. I mean, he's got an extensive story.
Guido Moosberger. Is that the guy you're thinking of?
Well, yeah, I've read that book, too. But no, it's the big coffee table book. I don't remember the name of the couple that put it out with the big giant color photographs and stuff in it.
I'm trying to remember. Gosh. That wasn't the guy that did the... when Colonel Wendell Stevens, he brought up an investigator's team. That wasn't the head of that private investigator's team that put out that photography book. You know, there were 1,400 images that Billy photographs that Billy took of the ships and stuff. I don't know. You probably knew that, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, it's an interesting case. It's hard to know exactly, but the problem is there are some photographs that seem to have been that are dubious. So it might be a case where he had some contacts and then he wanted to keep it going and I don't know, and maybe made some fake pictures. But you know, like the dinosaur pictures are pretty dubious. Where he supposedly was taken in a time machine back to, you know, the dinosaur times. Those pictures are apparently right out of another book. And then the pictures, the images of Tsimjase apparently were taken from a Dean Martin special from television. So I don't know.
You're not talking about Tsimjase there, though. You're talking about the... that was supposed to be Ask It.
Oh, okay. But, yeah. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. And what is the lady's name, the actress that.
Yeah.
The two are supposed to look very, very much alike.
Image.
What was that?
Well, the images are pretty similar from the Dean Martin special and those pictures that Billy had, you know.
Yeah, I know. That's, you know. It's a hard thing for people to understand. I think some of those photographs, from what I understand, were put out so people would have the ability to still choose. You know what I mean? Because I think that there's a lot of people on the earth that are not really... prepared for the existence of extraterrestrial life. So one of the things I think they wanted to do is to have enough evidence so that people would look into it, but not necessarily so much evidence that it would be overwhelming. You know, that so people could make their own minds up and they wouldn't be, you know, if you get so much information like that, it can be overwhelming for people. And I don't think that there's a lot of people that aren't really ready for this kind of information. Now, what convinced me that the case was absolutely real is when I started reading his books. And I started learning things, for example, about human consciousness and the difference between the material consciousness and the spiritual consciousness. And I started learning more about reincarnation and things like that. And then I realized, God, I've never read books like this before. I've never, it's like the most profound source of wisdom I ever came across. So that's kind of where I'm at. But I don't try to convince people that it's real. But we can go into some of the other stuff if you'd like.
Well, the UFO phenomena in general is a very difficult thing to study because there's certainly something going on there, but the whole phenomenon is wrapped in so much deception and either through intentional hoaxers, military disinformation, and it's a very complicated subject. I'm fascinated by UFOs. I've had several, actually three sightings in my lifetime, about 10 years apart. So I know that there's something going on, but the origin of these crafts and how much military involvement in and retro engineering of other technology, it becomes a very complicated question if these are actually from outer space or from secret military programs or from Antarctica, or from simply another dimension or outer space. You know, there's many different possibilities.
Or all the above, right?
Or all of the above. That's right. That's absolutely right. Yeah.
It doesn't have to be one or another, I don't think.
You're right. And it's a subject that sort of encompasses every aspect of the greatest questions of that human beings have been asking since the dawn of time, really.
The Meyer material says that 150,000 years ago, there was a civilization on the Earth that was ruled by a man named Pelagon, and it existed, I believe, for thousands of years. And then there was a great war, and then around 133,000 years ago, a guy named Atlant came to the Earth with his wife, and they were from another world, and they started the whole Atlantis thing. And one of the really interesting things about the Meyer material is that you get this whole another perspective on history. Because Billy has written, I think it's close to 70 books now on just about every topic you can imagine. And he's got 2,000 contact reports, I believe, and hundreds of bulletins that come out of Switzerland now. Yeah, there are some things that Billy says, I mean, particularly about things we're going through right now, that I look at that and I think, man, that just doesn't seem right. I got to be honest, that just doesn't seem right. But it's an unbelievable source of information. And I can get into the, I don't know what level of interest you have in this sort of thing, so I don't want to push anything on you.
I'm very interested in this sort of topic. I've studied, UFO phenomenon for, 20 plus years, but I have a fairly skeptical approach to it, just because it's one thing's clear: there is so much deception in the UFO field. It doesn't mean that there isn't something going on, but there's a lot of deliberate disinformation and misinformation put out there for a variety of reasons. But it's a deep field. Giuseppe, why don't you jump in, man? What do you want to add to this?
Well, a lot of phenomena going on. I have had some amazing unexplained sightings in my life, and that the one that happened on November 1st, 1996, outside of 13 miles north of Charlottesville, Virginia, and Rutgersville, Virginia, just was unbelievable. I mean, it's a long story, so I'm not going to tell it all right now, but the thing that I saw basically was probably extra dimensional, because it was rotating. It was a large translucent structure that was about, initially when it came up to my then girlfriend, now wife, and I, as we were driving down this country highway to get towards the apartment I was renting. It was about 250 feet in the air and in front of us and about 200 feet off the ground. And it was large, easily, I don't know, 50, 100 feet. And it was rotating on an axis. It was look who joined us, Mr. Chris Weinert. That's cool. And then it was rotating, spinning, and then it was undulating. It was growing larger and smaller all simultaneously. It was doing things that you cannot do with known physics in this reality. And it was the most stunning thing to see when you see the laws of physics being broken before your eyes. And it was also very interested in us because it then moved to within 150 feet in front of us and above us and was like evaluating us. And then it came to about 75 feet in front of us and above us. And it was very close, and you could see the details. It was like translucent, like a jellyfish. And it had sections like a sliced orange, and there was movement inside these sections. And then it continued to rotate on its axis, spin and undulate again, clearly beyond the laws of physics that we have to live by. And then the really nutty thing was there was a ton of fog, like you were socked in at a port city. The clouds had come to the ground, and then it we were waiting to see if it was coming even closer. It shot straight up in the air, and a moment later, all the fog was gone. I mean, unbelievable. I wrote 3 pages of notes when I got home to my apartment, and we were just – that was truly an amazing sighting.
I had a case, a sighting that was somewhat similar to that. Me and my wife, it was probably close to midnight. And I believe we were on I-71 going north. We had just been in Cincinnati. And, you know, you got your traffic coming south and traffic coming north. And there was a gigantic ball of white light on the other side of the expressway, about 100 yards in front of us and about 40 feet in the air. And this light was almost tangible. That's the only way I can explain it. It looked almost like it had a form to it, and it was spherical. And then what happened is suddenly, like in the middle of this white light, was a kind of a triangle-shaped craft that almost looked like a boomerang. And the light went away, and the craft went over top of the expressway, and I had my wife pull off the road, and the craft went over the top of us. It had a white light on the tip, kind of a circular on the bottom, and 2 white lights on the bottom of the left and right side of this. And there was also this fog thing that you were talking about. Something like that, and the craft just disappeared. And all the other cars, no one else pulled over. It was like they didn't even see it.
Oh, wow.
It's so bizarre. So, yeah, that was about, oh, gosh, I don't know, 8 or 10 years ago. And then I had a whole series of very strange, interesting things that happened when I was a child. And maybe we can go into those later. Interesting. What was that?
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. That's a common element where only certain people seem to have access to seeing the phenomenon. And if someone's standing right next to them, they don't see it. That's reported many times.
Yeah. It's just, I kept asking Donna, I say, you see this, don't you? You see that thing up there above the road, right? And she says, yeah, yeah. It was like nobody else saw it. No other cars pulled over. It was the weirdest thing.
Well, Chris Weinert, a.k.a. Brutal Honesty, has joined us. And, you know, his show comes on later tonight, actually, 6 p.m. Eastern. Chris, why don't you jump in? What's your thoughts on UFOs and the Billy Meyer case?
Wow. Well, the Billy Meyer case, I've heard a lot of different things on the internet about that, and I haven't really tracked down all these situations. So as far as commenting on that, I'll give it a pass. But as far as UFOs, I think they're very real. I think that what we know in terms of monotheism and religious indoctrination and scriptures are greatly exaggerated by many of the bloodlines that had not only interacted with these beings, but in many cases had been at war with certain beings, let's say. I think there's a war amongst them, or even a generational conflict in terms of their origins or direction of humanity or things like that, possibly in terms of intelligent design. And I'm certainly not an expert, but I do have a strong opinion on this, that certain people are in fact targeted by these things more so than others. And in many cases, I think a lot of people now are starting to even awaken to a consciousness that they hadn't really known before. And maybe it could be a result of either intelligent design or even interference from intelligent beings. So the military is involved with a lot of this stuff. The military is trying to intercept a lot of this stuff and, like you say, reverse engineer it. But there is a force out there that is beyond their scope and control that is probably keeping humanity from destroying itself over and over again. I'll say that.
Interesting. What are your thoughts on that, Mark?
I'm glad he said that, because it opens up a whole new area of discussion when you bring in, I guess we could call it religion. Now, the Meyer information talks about Jehovah as Yehovah. And he was a part of a lineage of what they call the Giza intelligences. And right after, see, Atlantis and Lemuria destroyed each other in this gigantic war. And there was a group of extraterrestrials that came back, because what was left on the Earth was, you know, just us primitive Earth humans who, you know, didn't know our history, didn't know what happened. We were just scrounging to stay alive. And so, this intelligence, this group of extraterrestrial humans, they were human beings from another star system, came to the Earth, let's say 113,000 years ago, something like that. And they set up underneath the Great Pyramid these large cubical constructions, which were like 70,000 years old. And they used religion to try to manipulate the people of the Earth. And it started, say, back with a guy named Eris the 11th. Who was a descendant of Eris the Barbarian, which was one of these people that started the Great War between Atlantis and Lemuria. And there was a guy named Jehovan, who about 3,660 years ago wanted to be called the Creator. And he started this religion on the Earth. And he was murdered by his son, Jehave, about 340 years into his reign. And then Jehave became megalomaniacal like his father, and he proclaimed himself as the Creator. And he had a son, Arisaim, and then Arisaim eventually murdered Jehave, and Arisaim wanted to take the power that his father had. And this is all taking place, you know, around Egypt and all this. His younger brothers, Ptah and Solomon, stopped him from taking over here on the earth. But eventually, Arisaim came back, and that's when he went below the Great Pyramids, and he created these ancient cubicle constructions below the pyramid. And Arisaim and his followers became known as the Giza intelligences. And Arisaim ruled until about 3010 BCE. And then Hen, who was also called Jehovah, took over for Erasame's role. And it was about 2080 BC where Jehovah, the guy, the God of the Old Testament, was forced out by his nephew Comegal. And then the Comegal took over leadership of the Giza intelligences. And then he was usurped by Comegal II, who was still on the earth as early as December of 1976. So that's one of the reasons we're so confused and tortured by our religions, because there was this extraterrestrial group, at least according to my information, that was kind of behind this whole thing. I kind of went off on a tangent there. So you guys, back to you. Well, and I'd like to hear your feedback on that.
Interesting stuff there, Mark. And, you know, I guess the bottom line too is there only has to be one UFO sighting to be verified as real, which I think there are many, many, but there only has to be one for the entire laws of physics as we've been, you know, taught to be completely thrown out the window and proven to be verifiably false. And, you know, it's interesting how in the 30s, you know, the so-called Nazis, the Germans, were working on extremely advanced physics and were developing anti-gravity craft, you know, way before, you know, anyone else, at least in modern recorded history, because they completely discarded Einsteinian physics. And they saw that Einstein's version of physics was completely bogus, and they embraced the concept of the ether. And apparently the concept of the ether is one of the central points around which, you know, anti-gravity and free energy can operate. And without that understanding, you're never going to get anywhere. So in some ways, this Einsteinian physics, we've been told, has just been this giant roadblock for, you know, physics to move forward into any kind of real breakthroughs.
You know,
in core physics that we see, there's a whole new level of physics. That is just, you know, I'm telling you, there's a deep state physics. I mean, if you don't have a clearance and a PhD, you won't know anything what I'm talking about. But if you knew, you know damn well what I'm talking about. Bob Lazar was more right than most people will give him credit for.
Right.
And I have to say, you need to look at some of the things he said a long time ago. Maybe he was being manipulated by intelligence operatives. Maybe I'll give them that. But I'll say he was onto a lot more than most people give him credit for.
Mark, we have a question from the chat. By the way, Mark's show, Ohio Exopolitics, immediately follows Scorpio. So stay tuned for more great information from Mark in 90 minutes. And Mer Bailey, who's just an amazing regular chatter and listener viewer, just comes, is such a brilliant researcher in her own right. She wants to ask you, do you have any thoughts on William Mills Tompkins? He was on Rents quite a bit and talked about the UFO phenomenon in great detail. Have you ever looked into William Mills Tompkins at all?
Yeah, if it's the guy I'm thinking about, he always referred to them as the Pleiadians and the extraterrestrials that were working with our government, human extraterrestrials at that time. And he was supposedly in meetings where they were sitting there right at the table. I don't know what to make of that. You know, he's a very, very interesting guy. I don't know that much about him, really, because once I got sucked into this black hole of this Billy Meyer material, I had to let some of this other stuff go. You know what I mean?
Well, Tompkins, one of his big things was that, you know, the research that the government was doing on, you know, anti-gravity technology with the help of certain extraterrestrial groups, most notably the so-called Pleiadians. And he was involved in this stuff for his entire career. And it sort of dovetails in a way to some of the information that Bob Lazar brought out. And I agree with Chris. Bob Lazar was, I think he was telling the truth. And he even admitted that, you know, they gave him these books to read when he first got to Area 51 that talked about the grays and the origin of the technology. He says flat out that might have all been bullshit. I don't know. But, you know, it's interesting how Bob Lazar's entire record was sort of wiped off the face of reality. You know, all his college transcripts were gone. And, you know, it's interesting, after he was booted out of the whole program at Area 51, he went on to actually develop a hydrogen-powered Corvette. He was really into Corvettes, and he was actually making hydrogen using low radiation reactions that he was able to make into compressed hydrogen. And he ended up getting raided by the feds and was almost thrown in federal prison for a very long time as some kind of nuclear terrorist. But he actually made hydrogen-powered cars and was going to try to market them, but the feds shut that whole thing down. But there's a video of his car that he made, and he was actually developing the hydrogen on his property. I think it was in New Mexico. So a lot of his stuff definitely checks out. I agree with that.
Yeah, a lot of these innovators, if they can't hire them, then they either threaten them or kill them or something like that, or put them in jail for a long time till they come along. So, yeah, they find these people at young ages and really go after them. I can certainly tell you that. And, I have to say that these people are probably from a certain lineage, too, and I think there's a bloodline that's involved. And I think there's a eugenics program that's involved right now, and I think that this is why Big Data is trying to gather everybody's biometrics right now. Rockefeller and such. No joke.
Interesting. What do you think they're trying to gather the biometrics?
Because this is a long-term war about full-spectrum dominance over the human species. And I think they have to know who's who and who's of the old lineage and who's not. And I think that, I don't know, this is kind of a separating of the wheat from the chaff, as the Bible would indicate. You know, this is one of those things, a universal truth and cycle.
Another question from Mark in the chat from Poppy. Mark, didn't Billy Meyer say the Pleiadians said Hitler was originally supposed to be a gift for humanity?
Yes, very, very, very good question. And I'm glad that they asked that question. That's a very astute question. Now you're getting into some interesting, very, very interesting material. Yes, Hitler was, in many respects, he was a genius, and he eventually learned the power of suggestion by a fellow that was named Eric Jonassen, who was also known as Hermann Steinschneider, who was a fellow that was influenced by the Thule Society in Germany. And the Thule Society was influenced by those group of extraterrestrials that were underneath the Great Pyramid until about 1970 or 76 or something like that. So this Eric Jonassen, who is also known as Hermann Steinschneider, started to heavily influence Hitler. Now, Hitler was destined to lead the overall Earth politics and economy, and he would have pushed everything in a positive direction. He would have created a peaceful, united world. I mean, it's totally different than what we hear about. So what ended up happening, that Hitler got set on the wrong path by this Eric Jonassen / Hermann Steinschneider, who was influenced by the Thule Society. And again, the Thule Society was influenced by these Giza intelligences. And eventually, Hitler went on the wrong path. So there was, in some ways, these Giza intelligences kind of took possession of Hitler's being, and they misused him for their own malicious purposes. So, yes, that's a very, very interesting story indeed.
Yeah, and a great question from the chat. Thanks for bringing that in, Giuseppe. That's a fascinating topic. And if you think about it, too, like, you know, we're told, oh, Hitler is the most evil man that ever lived, blah, 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 the death camps, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, if you think about it, could we end up in a worse situation than we are in now if Hitler had won the war? I mean, think about it. Here we have a covert global government that really is trying to embark upon a plan of global genocide for many, many people. And then they're planning on enslaving those who survive this. And, you know, I think they're just beginning with this COVID hoax and their plans for genocide. So, again, we're told so many lies about every aspect of human history. It's really staggering. What are your thoughts on what I just said there, Mark?
Ask him a quick one. Hey, Mark,
let him respond to that.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Then I'll come back. Yeah. Just let him in after.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts on that, Mark?
Well, you covered a lot of topics there. Is there anything specific?
Well, take wherever you want to go, man.
Okay. Well, one thing, and this is a little bit kind of a tangent. Yeah, I mean, things are very bad right now. I mean, it's so bad. I would have never thought we would ever get to this point. And yeah, I think Hitler has been created as a scapegoat in many ways. Although, I mean, he certainly did some bad things for sure. But one thing I thought would be interesting, because we were talking a little bit about physics, is that the Meyer information explains that our universe has an intelligence behind it. They don't use the word God. They use the word creation. And they say that our universe is basically elliptical shaped, and it has 7 counter-rotating rings. And the 4th ring in our universe is where all the stars and the planets and the galaxies reside, and they call it the material belt. Now, the other 6 layers of our universe are what they call fine matter. And this is something our scientists haven't discovered yet. Now, every human being has within them something called the Geist form, or the spirit form, which is located in our superior colliculus, which is in the center of the middle brain. And it comes into the body of the fetus at 21 days. It causes the heart to beat, and it causes this lattice energy structure to go over the whole body of this fetus. So at 21 days, the brain actually starts to work and starts to think. So every human being has this spirit form that is a tiny fragment of this universal consciousness. Now, the universal consciousness is neither good nor evil. It's balanced with negative and positive. To understand what it is, there is a term in the German that describes this as a Wesenheit. Now, this is the greatest intelligence in our universe. It's the greatest power in our universe, but it has no personality. So I don't know if you've heard of any of the research now that's done that talks about a morphic field. Is it Sheldrake that talks about
Rupert Sheldrake, the morphic field, or he called it initially the morphogenic field. And I'm just seeing an eerie coincidence that, according to researchers, Herman Steinschneider changed his name to Mark Schneider, moved to Ohio, and he does not age. What the hell?
That's great, man. I love that. That's awesome. you threw me off the track here. Okay, but what I wanted to talk about in this material belt, where the planets and the stars and the galaxies are, this is further subdivided. Now, it's subdivided into seven different dimensions. Now, they don't use the term dimension in the Meyer material. They call it time-space configuration. So the extraterrestrials that set up civilizations on Earth in the ancient past came from another space-time configuration. They were human beings. They lived on planets just like us. But they came here from a different space-time configuration. So, you know, people say they tend to think that, you know, these people come from other planets or they come from other dimensions. I say it's both. But anyway, I thought I would share that with you and pass the ball back to you.
Okay, cool. I know Chris wants to jump in with a question and comment. Go ahead, Chris, man.
Yeah, I was just saying, when you were talking about Hitler, I wanted to say that I think that he was a bastard son of George the Fifth and would have been the eldest, the firstborn of his, and maybe born into a Rothschild chambermaid. But really? Going with that, maybe these bloodlines have this clandestine controlled opposition that they put out in every instance where they don't leave anything to chance, whereas win or lose in any election or conflict, one way or another, their thoroughbred horse will be brought in for the genetic bloodline control of the option, win or lose.
Interesting. You know, a really interesting book to read about Hitler is called The Young Hitler I Knew by August Kubizek. And it's the only book that I know of that written by a childhood friend of Hitler who knew him as a young man. And he paints a really interesting picture of who this man was and what he was up to. And, you know, Hitler claimed very strongly that he never wanted to get involved in this war. He was forced into it. And that once that happened, things really spiraled out of control.
You know,
he offered different chances to let them call for peace. He had them down in the valley twice. He could have wiped them out in Dunkirk. Why didn't he? He chose to fix his tanks instead of destroy the French and the British. Why? What's up with that? You know, I mean, these are tactical. They're not blunders. These are things like this is like a Masonic thing, man. This is the Santa Ana handshake.
Also Hitler sent messages to Britain and said, look, I don't want to have a war with the English people. Didn't he say that several times?
Well, he said multiple times that he admired the English. He felt they were all Europeans. So,
right.
Like his brother's on the throne, right? If you think about it that way.
It's possible. But the other explanation is that, you know, Hitler came from a very humble background. And I think he really got in over his head on it. I don't think he understood a lot of the forces that he was up against. And there was traitors within his own inner circle too that were working against him from the very beginning.
Oh, Rothschild had him surrounded. Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, but there's a lot of ways you can interpret those things, and there's no easy answers. But one thing's for sure: World War II was an absolute disaster. There was no need for it to ever exist. Same with World War I, and now they're trying to cook up a new war as this COVID narrative starts to fall apart. The idea that we're going to get involved in some kind of conflict with Russia over the Ukraine is just the most insane thing I've ever heard of. But you can see how they're trying to, you know, position the pieces on the chessboard right now for some kind of coming conflict.
Yeah, it looks like they're wanting this war. It's so unbelievable. Gosh. You know, every way you look at this whole situation, it is just bad, bad, bad.
Trick loop playing itself over and over again. Look at like when they fought World War I and when the carnage came on with the Spanish flu and all that stuff, the typhoid, all these outbreaks after vaccination programs. It's the same thing. The same guys studied these pandemics and are doing the same thing now, steering us to safety with two masks and these vaccines and the RNA recombinants. You know, this is crazy. I mean, this is such a mind effery. I can't believe what's going on right now.
That is an excellent point, because look at 100 years later, the Century Loop, the United States is under attack by Bolshevik 2.0, these insane radical Jews and their minions in the color revolution. It's all that is an excellent point, Chris.
War of 1812, too. It's the century before as well. Same damn thing. Rothschild Central Bank.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. Isn't it interesting how the first charter of the American Central Bank expired in 1811, and then lo and behold, a year later, we are at war with England. I wonder why.
Yeah.
You know, a guy that I work with, he leads the group that I work in. I sent him a link to one of Dr. Sherry Tenpenny's shows, and I was hoping he said he would watch it, but then I heard the following week that he took the shot. So I don't know if he listened to it. Yeah, I don't know if he listened to it or not, but I think it's been 4 days or 5 days since he took the shot, and he already mentioned that he just feels like he can't think. He said, I feel so thick. My mind is working slowly. And I just told him, I said, man, I never take these shots. So I don't know if he's going to take any boosters or what, but I kind of felt bad that I hadn't persuaded him not to do it. You know, it's like, I don't understand this compulsion to get this shot.
Oh, I agree. Well, you know, Mark, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. And so many people are under this illusion that if we all just take the shot, things are going to go back to normal. And that ain't the case.
And Scorpio and Chris and Mark, the level of gaslighting lies, these normies actually think this shot is going to protect them against COVID. That is an out and out lie by these Jew-controlled big pharma murderers. All these shots do is ameliorate or lessen some of the symptoms and create through genetic modification via the Moderna or Pfizer shot or through adaptogen antibody hardwiring through the Pfizer Johnson & Johnson. They do the same thing. They hardwire the immune system to create an antibody spike, which will produce a certain type of antibody to fight what they know at the time is the so-called corona virus, which it's doubtful viruses even exist and cause disease, but that's a whole nother topic. The point is that it's an out-and-out lie. People don't understand they're being experimented on. They're being gaslit to think that, oh, if you get this shot, it'll protect you. But the results of once this spike, this antibody protein spike, it finishes developing, and from what I've researched, it takes 3 to 18 months for it to actually develop. It's going to be horrific. Go ahead, Mark.
And Giuseppe, I was going to ask you real quick. You're talking about the spike protein that will develop in 3 to 18 months, you say.
Right.
I know people that have suffered serious impact from within the first few hours, first 3-4 days, people couldn't get out of bed or go to work. The people that I've been hearing from out here, out east, you know, whether it's Johnson & Johnson or any of these things. So,
well, I'll tell you why that is. It's because you are introducing much like for people whose immune function and physiology is sensitive, you're introducing foreign living matter. You're introducing aborted fetal shell. You're introducing synthetic messenger RNA. The body reacts to that as a threat.
Shock.
Yeah, exactly. That's what happens. Yeah. So it's the case. The acute trauma can kill sensitive people. That's what's going on, or maim them. That's what's going on in the first few hours.
I'd also like to add that they have $352 billion of funding from the last stimulus package alone for propaganda on vaccine, quote unquote, safety. That is the most absurd contradiction in terms and oxymoron I've ever heard, vaccine safety.
Absolutely.
So you guys take it from there.
There you go. Well said.
Well, didn't Dr. Tenpenny say something about the antibody to the spike protein destroying your lungs? and that it also it attacks the type 2 white blood cells, the microphages, I think she called it, and it kills them. And those are the white blood cells that kind of heal things and clean up the mess. So when you take this vaccine, your body kind of goes crazy. The inflammatory white blood cells destroy your lungs, attack other parts of your immune system, like these anti-inflammatory white blood cells. And eventually, you're just left in this horrific state. Now, I think Dr. Lorraine Day, she was saying that, what are they called, prions, that this vaccine...
Right.
Those are folded proteins.
Well, prions...
It's like mad cow stuff, right?
Right. Mad cow, it attacks the brain and it eats away at the brain. The natural human immune system, the white blood cells, are the defense, right? You've got macrophages, which are essentially cells that, remember that Pac-Man where it shows the game and it'll eat things? That's what a macrophage does. It eats, literally surrounds an alien contagion, and then it releases lysosomes, which destroys the macrophage and the invader. That's what. And then you have four different other kinds of primary white blood cell defenders, like neutrophages. And when I took my national boards, I had them all memorized, but I don't remember the names of the other three because it was 15 years ago. But essentially, the white blood cells are excellent. When you're healthy, whatever gets in you, it doesn't get past that initial area. It's when your immune system is compromised. And what you're referring to with Dr. Sherry Tenpenny is something called a cytokine storm, which is the body literally attacks itself thinking everything is an invader because it's hardwired to not see itself anymore. And you know, what's going to be horrific once that protein spike is working is much like the iPhone. You know, the iPhone will update from 14 to 14.1. It's not a big deal. But when the coronavirus, which is ubiquitous in nature and is everywhere, when it does a massive natural mutation and goes from 14 to 15, that's when anybody who has that protein spike and hardwired antibodies is going to freak out. It won't know what to do. That's why they want to do the boosters, thinking that they can catch it in time, but they'll never be able to inoculate the millions of shitheads who've taken this shot. So you're going to see massive death, and the cytokine storm, it attacks your lungs, it attacks your heart swells, it attacks your liver and your liver clogs. It's just a horrific way to die, and there's nothing. They're going to try and take these people to emergency rooms, and there's nothing they can do to save them because it's hardwired. All they're going to do is put them on a bunch of morphine and create end of life triage, massive warehouses for all these people that die. It's intentional, and this is being done by these globalist parasites, these Satanists, to cull the herd.
Right. Can we be in a worse situation than we are now? I really don't think so. And I think that's a very plausible scenario you're painting there, Giuseppe. And I think also another corollary of this is they're going to try to make people whose immune systems are so weakened that they're going to be dependent on vaccines for their very survival in the future because their immune system is going to essentially be not functioning any longer. So we really are living through the biggest mass medical experiment in the history of recorded history, essentially. We're down to the last couple of minutes. And Mark, your show comes on at 4 p.m. Eastern. What do you have planned for today, man?
Well, I've got a couple guests coming on. I hope hopefully a couple of you guys will show up. I think Giuseppe is going to come, right?
Yeah, 4:30 to 5, you said. 4:30.
Yeah. We can continue this discussion, I guess, is what we could do. Sounds good to me, anyway.
Well, I'd like to explore more of your life as Herman Steinschneider.
He was probably related. I hate to admit it. Probably related. So we got another hour, don't we? Or how does this work?
Well, actually, I have another guest coming on for the third hour.
But, okay.
We'll, have you on again soon, man. This has been a great conversation. And maybe why don't you give us some final thoughts in the last minute or so, man?
Well, I just really enjoyed talking to all you guys. You know what's so interesting is this whole Saturday thing is kind of interesting. I did not realize who was before me and who was after me. And Dave, if you get a chance, come on the show. And is that Chris in there too?
Chris Weiner, Brutal Honesty.
Yeah. You know, please, I'd love to have you on today if you have time. We won't keep you too long.
Well, send me a Janelle. It could happen. I can do that. Yeah.
Okay. See you later, guys.
I have to take a break, but I would, you know, in the future, just keep me in mind. You know.
Okay.
Okay. Welcome back to hour number three and the final hour of Operation Scorpio. This hour, we're going to be joined by Roger Sales, a fellow expat and a guy that's been involved in radio for a very long time. Roger, how are you, sir?
Now you need to mute one of them.
Right. Okay.
Echo check.
Okay.
There's Chris. He's okay. So, Chris, are you still on the road?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, up in Maine.
Oh, that's cool.
Way upstate.
Nice.
Yeah, almost to Canada.
It's beautiful up there.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. That's what I was trying to tell Mark, that, man, I appreciate the offer of coming on the show, but I'm probably not going to be able to make it just because I got my show after. And, you know, just being on the road and that, it's kind of tricky.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, know. I'm going to get
Outlaws.
I'm going to add Roger on to the call here. Just give me a second. I've got to scroll through a million contacts here.
Dave, you got so many friends.
Okay, here we go. Yeah,
that's true.
I agree. Met a lot of cool people through this, for sure.
No doubt, man. It's been awesome.
Yeah, for real.
It's been like a restoration of hope to see how many people are really woke and aware of what's going on and actually starting to move in the right direction. So, yeah, it's good to see.
Okay.
Just to wake them up and get them going. But man,
exactly. Okay, so I'm calling Roger through Skype now. And let's see if he can get on through that.
Yep, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
There he is.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. I can hear you, Roger.
Okay, can you hear me, Roger?
I'm getting a lot. I'm gotten you in two places here, so let me yank those headsets out. Okay, sorry, guys. You know, we do, on my show, we use a two or three pieces of freeware that hook together that allow us to do our broadcast, and I'm sure there's just some snafu switch in this system, and it wasn't checked out, and I don't know how to straighten it out. So,
well, no problem. All's well that ends well, as they say.
Yes. That's just like you got to be an IT specialist to live day to day in our world anymore. Yeah. It seems like.
Yeah. Roger, first of all, why don't you tell us about your show and when people can hear it and what network it's on?
All right. We have our own little network. It's called the People's Patriot Network. PeoplesPatriotNetwork.com is the website. Our sister network is a network called Eurofolk. And Giuseppe, somebody's hitting me there. Eurofolk.
That's me.
Radio. Okay, good. Good to see you, Giuseppe. Eurofolk Radio is mainly when it kicked off the air. It's an identity, a Christian identity type network. And they formed really to fight the same thing we're going through now at the border when it was going on in Europe. And so the guy that put that up and did all the research when I got bumped off my last, what I call my ex-wife, the last network I was affiliated with. And I said, I'm tired of dealing with these types of people that run these other networks. And he contacted me and said, let's start this one. And that's what we did. So
I call English?
A fledgling little network. And I'm on twice a day, actually, from with all the time changes. I think it's 11 to 1 Eastern. And then replays at night, and you can get it through either one of those, Eurofolk Radio or PeoplesPatriotNetwork.com. And I have archives that go back 2.5 years over on another site, that all this stuff's at the bottom of a piece of information I'm going to promote. So if people, rather than giving you all this, I'm just going to say it's all at the bottom. I've recently written a, after all these years, I've been in this almost 30 years, guys, okay? Knocking on the door 30 years. And my teachers and myself, one of which is now dead, the law guy, over 100 years between the three guys' lives. My teacher spent 15 and a half years in federal prison for teaching this information 25 years ago, okay? And it was as it dealt with taxes. And it's so, it was the thread that led to the whole scam, and they knew that. And that's why they came down so hard on John and Glenn. My teachers. So it's how they've done this, and they've enslaved you in your mind, okay, literally.
Right.
And they've used the black man and to do it, and then they use that to enslave all of us. I can explain it fairly simply. We don't have a ton of time, and it is it's a series of issues because they had to do it in several steps, okay? It's a series of issues that we could take any one of them and dig down, and we do on my show regularly because it's formatted to be able to do that sort of thing, and dig down for two or more hours on each one of these issues, you know, like a birth certificate, what all happens and all that, what is it actually, what documents are we really dealing with, how do they operate, all those kind of things. But we don't have time to do that, so let's just suffice it today to say that you've been enslaved. What I'd like to do, did any of y'all hear, I did a very hard-hitting interview with Deanna Spingola back at the 1st of February, around the 6th. Have any of you been exposed to that yet?
No, I haven't heard that particular show. I'm familiar with his work. And, you know, I'm a big fan of Paul English and his network. He's a great guy.
He is. He's a fantastic guy to work with. I can't tell you how pleased I am, Dave, being able to have the privilege to work with Paul, okay, real honestly. And I figure our paths were guided across each other. Well, let's start this way, okay?
Okay.
After doing this for all these years, there's a number of ways you can approach it. It involves several steps. I would say something like this as a teaser. When you really get your arms around this, you're going to easily see why the Civil War was fought. And it wasn't about slavery. It was aggravated and really agitated by the tax issue. But the whole thing was fought to put the 13th and the 14th Amendment in place so they could control the world with it 100 years later, which is exactly what's going on. Okay.
Same with War of 1812, too, the original 13th.
Yeah, it's always been a fight with the money powers, no doubt. But I think what happened after Jackson got rid of the second bank is they said, listen, we're going to come back with a plan these bastards are not even going to ever get out of. They ain't never going to understand. And it all hinges on what I'm going to explain to you. And the way they've done it is absolutely incredible because you've given them the power. It's structured where you, me, all of us, our entire lives have always given them the power. That's why they're able to do what they're doing. Okay? And the only way we're going to beat it collectively is to take it back from them. And if we could do that one simple thing and get this message to the multitudes, and many people are hungry to hear it right now, we could flip this thing pretty quick, man, because this totally exposes their fraud. It totally exposes the scam. It totally exposes who they are. They've got no way to rebut it. They can't even address it because they're guilty just by submitting the paper. Okay? So it's right. Very, very powerful. And let's start this way, and we'll try and get through a little bit here with the time we've got left after our little technical snafu. But let me just add, we can go into this at any time, and this is what my show's about, is 5 days a week we go into this stuff, and I'm begging for new people to come on and ask questions, because when I get to answer your new questions, everybody else that's listening and involved and students get to hear it again. And you can't hear these things enough, especially the basics. For instance,
great, yeah.
For instance, what's the legal concept behind the word person? Very important word, you know. It's in almost all statutes. Almost all the man-made laws they write are all directed at persons. Well, what is it? You know, what's a legal person? What's a natural person? What's an artificial person? Well, all those things, those are the kind of things I teach. And the reason I've been successful at this is because my teacher studied the basics and knew those, and they don't teach them in law schools anymore and haven't for about 100 years.
Well, who were your main teachers there, Roger?
John Benson is the gentleman that is now deceased, and he's just a little guy who was always interested in the law. He was particularly interested in tax law to the day he died. And then a guy that he got that came along as his sidekick, quote unquote, is named Glenn Ambort. Glenn's still alive, and he you ever heard? I'm sure you have. As a rhetorical question, you've heard of Roger Staubach, right?
Sure.
Well, he tutored him through Annapolis to the Heisman Trophy.
Right? Wow.
So he's a very impressive guy. When he got finished with his military obligations, he got very interested in gambling, professional gambling, and started studying game theory. And he went out gambling, and in 2 years, he's barred by in over 40 casinos all the way from the Caribbean up the East Coast. He's a pretty interesting fellow, okay, and another one of those people I'm very privileged to have worked with. And Glenn, I don't hear from him too much. He got real aggravated with all this because they got the whole tax scam perfect, and to the point where the Department of Justice issued a nationwide moratorium on anybody bringing up the issue of Push Code 09 in any district court in the United States. They can't even bring it up. They're enjoined from bringing it forward.
Well, explain what that is. What is Push Code 09?
Like I said, any of these things we can get into for hours, the tax code especially, but that is where they take a voluntary system and make it appear to be involuntary. They make you think it's forcing you, because that's where they override the computer with Push Code 09 and substitute what's called a substitute for return, otherwise termed a dummy return in the Patriot communities. And that's where the IRS agent slips in a 1040 form, because the computer has to have one. It's programmed to operate correctly. And if you haven't filed one, they got to put one in there. Okay. And so they stop the computer, override it with that push code, the agent enters a signed return he signed, and then it can go on to assessment and collections, and then they come get your stuff, you know. But that's all very complicated. The tax code started in 1285. Our tax code started in 1285. And if you want to understand and get a glimpse of it, there's a good article on my main website, sovereigntosurf.com, all spelled out, sovereigntosurf.com. And on the right is a very scholastic article written, I think, in the 80s. It was published in the Georgetown Law Review. And it was written by a Jewess named Judith Shapiro. And the title of the article is How the Jewish Shetar Invaded the English Common Law. Okay? Now, that's the start of our tax system. And she tells you a whole bunch of facts, and it's a very well-written and accurate article. She just somehow forgets to tell you that a Jewish Shetar is a 1040 form.
Well, you're not trying to imply that the Jews are behind some of this, are you?
No. No, it's just that they're the merchants of the world. And, you know, they're named in the Bible. And they're the Revelation 2:9 and 3:9 Jews. And, yeah, they're the ones that are very adept at this whole merchant law. And that's what we're in. What's going on is we think we're fighting constitutional law, and we're fighting the merchant law. And it's like if we were challenged by the feds to a game, and they said, winner take all, okay? Does that sound like a good deal? You think we can beat them? All right? So we're out there, and we're in our little shorts and our shoes, and we're practicing dribbles and layups and three-point, don't miss a one, okay? And the feds come out on the field, and they don't have Nikes on. They got these black shoes on with this metal thing. And they got these sticks, and they're throwing this little black thing around at 100 miles a damn hour. Who do you think's going to win that game?
Well, yeah, I'd say it's a rigged game from the start, no question.
Well, it is, because we don't know the rules. And what I've been able to be guided to understand and can get everybody to do is to level the playing field where everybody's on the same rules now. and we got access to the common law. Because the problem is, if you have, let me see if I can get to this term, constitutional rights. Do you hear that very often? I can't take my constitutional rights, et cetera. You heard that in our community? Well, in everywhere.
Sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, the only rights the Constitution gives you are civil rights through the 14th Amendment.
Right,
the
right.
Others are God-given rights that are constitutionally protected.
Well, God-given rights can't be taken away either, unlike constitutional rights.
Well, they can be if you agree to it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now here's what's happening. This is, we'll get back to this start and go over as much time as we got to play with here. Okay, I did this very thing with Deanna. I can send you a link, just about two and a half hours of her show, and it goes over. I've just had incredible accolades from even old students that how well that went and how effective it is, because this is a very complex situation, and then you're dealing with the fact that you're the one that's consented to it and given its agreement, and it really is fertile in your mind. So here's what's happening. In James 1:8, if you guys got some spirituality here, I think you know this is a spiritual battle, okay?
Absolutely.
In James 1:8, there's a verse that says, a double-minded man is uncertain in all of his ways. Okay, it doesn't say some of his ways. It doesn't say part of his ways. It says all of his ways. Right? And that's what they've done. They've made us all double-minded. And they've done it by assigning opposite definitions of words and then Pavlovianly conditioning us to the one they want us to regurgitate. Okay? So here's an example of when this started. All right? When was the first time you ever remember consciously being exposed to Alice in Wonderland?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, most popular children's story in the world, in history. Okay. Here's a little dialogue out of Alice. It's a dialogue between Alice and Humpty Dumpty. And he goes, when I use a word, Humpty Dumpty said in a rather scornful tone, it means exactly what I say it means, no more, no less. The question is, said Alice, how can you make a word mean so many different things? The question is, said Humpty Dumpty, who is to be master? That's all.
Yeah, that's great.
That's profound.
Right,
Giuseppe, why don't we get let Giuseppe come in here and ask you a question or something. Go ahead, Giuseppe.
Okay.
Roger, I'm just curious, you know, the average person like myself, I've researched a lot, but I've never really dabbled much into what you're discussing, because it doesn't seem to have practical implications in my life. You know, everybody talks about the fringes on the flag and all this stuff, and it's like, I don't know. I mean, it's fascinating, but how does it really free me from anything to do the things you're talking about?
How would you like to be free of every regulation promulgated by all 455 federal agencies, with the exceptions of two sections of the tax code? And be free of those, and none of those would apply to you. So when they pass laws for terrorism and this and that, and you do an EPA stuff and OSHA stuff and all that stuff, how about if none of that applied to you? Do you think that might be important?
Well, absolutely. But I would then follow up with this question, is like, when they kick my door in because they are totalitarian, violent thugs, And I tell them, hey, I'm free of all these things. Do you really think that they're not going to cuff me and frog march me out of my house and imprison me?
If you've taken the steps and put them on alert and changed your status, and they do that, and that's a very possible if they continue to gain strength, okay? I don't argue that, but at least if that happens, we'll all know what time it is, and we'll all know what the rules are then, won't we?
Oh, that's a good point. But yeah, I would like to be free of all that. And
do well, that's what happens here, and I'm going to show you and explain to you what they're doing. It's really very simple. It's just been done very complex. I can go to. I should have if I had the here. Why don't one of you? I'll just tell you where it is, and I wish I'd have thought of it and I had it where we could bring it up and look at it together. It's a State Department document. Okay, it's one of the most honest State Department statements I've ever seen these lying son of a bitches make. Okay, pardon my French. And it's over on a website, travel.state.gov. Travel.state.gov.
Okay, I'm there. Okay, right. Where do you want me to go now?
In the search field, mm-hmm. I want you to put certificate of non-citizen nationality. Certificate of non-citizen nationality. And a bunch of choices will pop up. Just pick the first one. Okay. So, when you're able to do that and you've got that up, let me know. And I'm going to tell you what this is. And I'm trying to get it. I'm probably getting the cart ahead of the horse. There you go. Good deal. Okay. Now, I want you to go down to the third paragraph there. And one of y'all read me the first 10 words.
As defined by the INA, the Immigration and Nationality Act, all U.S. citizens are U.S. nationals.
Okay, that's enough. Okay. That's enough. Okay. All U.S. citizens are U.S. nationals. Did you guys know you had a dual political status?
No, not in this capacity. That's fascinating.
See, this is a complex issue, and you guys, everybody thinks that they've got all this power, and they don't. Okay. And that's what I'm trying to show you. It took me many years to find this document and understand it, all right? But that statement tells you that we've got a dual political status. So let me ask you this question. Have you ever been asked if you're a U.S. national?
I'm 61 years old. I've never been asked that question.
Okay. Have you ever been asked if you were a citizen of the United States?
Constantly.
Have you ever been asked if you were a resident?
Yes.
Okay. What were they asking you when they asked you those questions that you've answered yes to every time they've ever asked you 40-something years of your life?
Do I follow their one rules and not the national set of rules?
How about the first one is, are you related to black slaves who received federal citizenship with civil rights after the Civil War?
Oh, explain how that goes. How does that differentiate it?
That's what a citizen of the United States is. It's a term of art legally. It's back to the 14th Amendment. All persons born or naturalized in the United States, comma, and subject to the jurisdiction thereof, comma, are citizens of the United States and the state wherein they reside. What do you think they were asking you when they asked you if you're a resident? Are you related to black slaves? Are you in a state after the Civil War asking for protection from the federal government against the intrusion of your state? Now, that's what they're asking you. You've answered yes to it every time they've ever asked you your entire life. And now you're bitching that you've given them all this power they're exercising on you, on the status that you've told them you are.
Interesting. Wow, that's profound. Again,
okay.
Interesting. I want to get Chris in here, but I want to ask you a question first. What do you see as the future of the United States? I mean, where do you think they're going to try to take things here in the near future?
Well, they're going to try and take us where they're all under Chinese-type Bolshevik control all over the world with their little systems and stuff. But you see, this is how they're doing all that. I mean, listen, I've been kind of having a handle on this for at least 11 years on the air. I wrote a book. So I highly recommend the book. My two teachers edited it. It's a masterpiece. The legal argument's a masterpiece, okay? The book is called From Sovereign to Serf, government by the treachery and deception of words. Okay.
Where can you get the book, Roger?
You get through my website, sovereigntosurf.com, or you can go to the publisher, thebookpatch.com. Okay. Again, all great. That information I've got for anybody that wants to follow up on this, and I'm going to tell you before we get off how to access this document that I've just recently written that this Deanna Spingola interview kind of revolved around, and it's called How to Escape the Matrix. And the reason I finally got motivated, I haven't been motivated to write too much over all these years because turning people onto this is like pulling teeth, okay? I mean, you'd be shocked at how many people want freedom and everything else, and I can stick this in front of them, and for whatever reason, they can't or don't see it. There's only a small amount of people this is supposed to register with, and I believe we're the remnant, okay? And what we're told to do is to come out of her, just like Dave and I have done. We're down here in Ecuador, okay?
And then
come out of her,
right,
you see?
Right.
You can come out of her financially. You can come out of her spiritually. You can come out of her geographically. And now you guys are about to learn. You can come out of her politically, too. And it's been right there in front of you your whole life, and it's just been hidden because these guys are the magicians. It's the same way David Copperfield made the Statue of Liberty disappear, all right? It's exactly the same type stuff. These are history's magicians. It's all done with words. So that's the key. Now, what they're doing and the reason that asking you those questions is so damned important is because now they've got what they can't do anything but crave without going to extremes like this, and that's your consent. Because even though you didn't understand it, guess what, pal? You just gave them consent to implement the fraud that they implemented at birth with the 14th Amendment, all persons born or naturalized. All persons born, like, you know, the term anchor babies. Okay.
Right. Right.
All the birthright, they have a nomenclature for it. They call it birthright citizenship. Okay.
Right.
And that means you're assigning a political status to you as where you're born, not who your parents were. Well, guess what, guys? Where do you think that comes from?
Where?
You ever heard of the feudal system?
Oh, absolutely.
It's the most integral system of the feudal system because in that system with 1,000 years precedent, people were property. And so just like your cows in the backyard, when they have a calf, the calf's yours just like they were. And that's how they perpetuated this thing since they switched the system on us in March the 9th of 33 because you're generationally enslaved, but you're in voluntary servitude. It has to be voluntary.
Through words, yeah.
Okay. If you go look at the 13th Amendment, remember they kicked out the previous 13th Amendment, which outlawed titles of nobility and stuff, and they ran this one in. Also important to note, they let the Southern legislators in to the Congress to vote on the 13th Amendment in June. 6 months later, when the 14th Amendment came up, they wouldn't let them in to vote on it. Okay. This one sets it up. And what's outlawed in the 13th Amendment? Involuntary servitude, except as a penalty for a crime, right? Well, voluntary servitude is legal by omission. It's involuntary servitude.
Interesting. Let's get a question in here from Chris. Chris, go ahead.
I don't really have necessarily a question, but I definitely am picking up what he's putting down. You know, the New Deal was actually – they split up a lot of the economics that were supposedly coming from these things where they were supposed to have different ledgers for each citizen. And I think that there's probably different accounting houses that really forged what we know as like Salomon Brothers, Lehman Brothers, Goldman Sachs. These guys were separate from the ones that crashed in 29 and took out and took over most of the finance industry. So. I think that there's two ledgers for each citizen. It reminds me of like the Justinian Code, the Juris Civilis
you know, where basically you're in an offer contract situation, you're in a volunteer situation, kind of like now where they legalize propaganda and then like people are legal or like voluntarily taking these emergency vaccines that are voluntarily, you know, disallowing their life insurance indemnities or things like these, you know, but this is something that I guess people will deal with after the panic settles. But these legal precedences and how they run these things, whether it's corporate crime or the Ponzi scheme we know as the Fed or any other one of their Ponzi schemes, it is mostly built on deception, Gollum enterprises. And they use and sensationalized violence and racial tension or religious strife or any of these things, selective tokenism in the way that they always have. And if you look at things like the COINTEL program, whether it's in the 1930s or the 60s or even now or in the 1990s, they've always been doing these type of things to play people within the caste system against each other while the people that take 95%+ of the GDP and yep. run these extortion scams, parallel infrastructures, and basically run ledgers. I think this whole thing is a depopulation tactic, really. The money that's in these hidden ledgers that people have that they should be entitled to and actually say that they're in debt to the tune of 20-something, 30-something billion dollars in the ridiculous amount for these propaganda pieces to promote COVID stuff. So, well, man, I'm looking at this going, wow, we are literally funding our own concentration –
you've agreed to it and given them all the power by answering those questions, yes, and saying basically, yes, I consent to the fraud that I was assigned this political status at birth. Okay? So
yeah, no.
There's a million ways to look at it. If you want to look at it financially, I can show you exactly when the system switched and how I can prove it to you. March the 9th of 1933. What happened on March the 9th? Go look at bank holiday in 1933. All the banks were closed. After 5 days, they opened up under the new position of Secretary of the Treasury and the regulations that he promulgates. Okay. Why did we go from gold to paper? Because in the previous system, people were not the object of their property rights, and you could go buy things and own them because you had property rights. When they switched the system, you're made property in the new system. Somebody else has property rights in you, so you can't own property. You have to pay for it with paper notes of debt and discharge it instead of paying for it because you're the object of somebody else's property rights.
Hey, Roger.
That's where the system changed, okay?
Simple ownership of property was transferred. The in illoitium ownership of property was turned into fee simple ownership after FDR.
Yeah, but you know what? Here's where you can get into a lot of this discussion. What is property?
Yeah, I'm with you.
Okay, well, all right. If you got a car out front, is that car your property? If it's paid for?
In theory, I guess that's where you got to look at the two different legal systems that are going on here. You know,
it's a colloquial system and a legal system. And what they're doing is they've got these two levels, and one of them's highly technical, and the other one's colloquial, and we bite on the colloquial one every time. Okay. No, the car out front is not your property. You have a property right in and to the car, but the car legally is now termed a thing. And you have a property right in and to the thing. So See how that one little wrinkle right there can throw a whole different perspective on things?
Absolutely.
Okay, here's
Roger, let me ask you, how did you get involved in all this research, and what made you leave the United States?
Well, several things. I got involved with it because I've always been curious since I was in high school in the 60s and realized something wasn't right, and I just didn't know what it was. I'd always been curious, and it took me a few decades of my life to find it, but I did. I found a thread, unfortunately crossed paths with these guys because they're the ones with the answers. Nobody else in our community's got the answers, and the reason why is because John Benson knew it was the feudal system. And if you don't know you're dealing with the feudal system fighting these guys, you're never going to do anything but shadow box with it because you're playing constitutional law and they're playing merchant law.
Mm-hmm. Damn right. God, so damn right.
You've got to level the playing field and take away their advantage. Their advantage is you've answered yes to those questions all of us have our whole lives and given them this power to collateralize our future labor. That's what they've done here, okay? And the reason they did it, the reason they went to the feudal system is so they could pull this off. Because now at birth, you're considered to be, your parents were considered to be voluntary serfs. They never came out of servitude. You're born into the same condition. And now they issue you a birth certificate, which the birth certificate's not the nexus. The nexus is when that information was created at birth. The birth certificate represents it. And what we think is it represents it again in a dual capacity. One is it gives all the facts of your birth, how what your eyes color were, hair color was, weight, height, all that stuff. Okay. The other is it's now, because it's in that system and you're considered property rights, now it is a commercial document called a warehouse receipt. Okay? And the warehouse receipt has some very peculiar circumstances to it. For one is the paper actually becomes the good. Okay? So they can possess the paper, and they've got constructive possession of you because they got property rights in you, and that represents a warehouse receipt. Do you know what? Do you know the process? One of my students had both of his daughters born in the same hospital in Austin, Texas, and went in and dug this out of them, okay? So that what I'm going to tell you, that's where this comes from, okay? And he was set under the pretense of building folders for his daughters, okay, so that if they never needed any of their important documents later on in life, they'd have them. So he's going in and probing around. And finally, the lady gets aggravated with him. So I'm going to send you down to the third floor where this stuff's done. And so he goes down there with his daughters, you know, cutoffs and flip-flops, very nonchalant, okay. And he goes up and he tells the lady what he's looking for. And she says, well, wait a minute. And she goes off for about 10 minutes, and she comes back, and she says, listen, you're not going to hold anything I tell you against us, are you? Okay? Uh-huh. So here's the procedure. When a child is born, there is a document that is generated called a verification of facts. And it's got all of that particular hair color, eye color, probably the footprint, you know, all that stuff on it. And at the bottom are two places where the mother and the father sign it. It's never signed. It's taken over to a computer, which there's a terminal from the feds in every hospital in the country. The data is input, all in capital letters. It's then transferred to the Bureau of Vital Statistics in the state, at which point the information is used to generate the birth certificate. Now, hold on to your seats. At which point, when generated, is taken to a bank vault that is guarded by armed guards 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Why?
Where is that vault located?
In the Vital Bureau of Vital Statistics. Okay. Now they are taking and collateralizing your future labor. I don't know how they go in and do that. It's got something to do with QSIP codes and stuff like that, but I've never just had the interest to go in and learn about it, quite frankly. I don't know if we'll ever find out technically how they're doing it, but they're collateralizing your future labor as their property, just like their voluntary serf, see? And then that's where the taxes come in, because the taxes excrete the tax money and pay off the bondholders. The bond is what is the important thing. Isn't bond the root word of bondage, by the way?
Yeah.
A good point. Okay. This all comes out of, like, in Genoa in, like, the 10th and 11th century, like, with the Prestiti and all the many of the bonds to the sovereign.
Black nobility, the Medici, all of that stuff is where this came from. This is the blueprint they used, evidently, there to take over countries.
Yeah, with the merchant guilds, no doubt.
Okay. So basically that's what they're doing. And if you look at the bottom, you know that document you had up earlier, the website there, that's an important document. There's some really key stuff in there. But can you bring that back up again, guys?
I can. Let me grab it.
Certificate of non-citizen nationality.
I bookmarked it. Just give me a minute.
Okay. Yeah, because I want to show you at the bottom how simple this is to get out of this, all right? And that document tells you, you wonder if they're going to come bang your door in. No, they're not. And the reason they're not going to do it is they don't want to draw attention to you. They don't want this information out. They're scared as hell of this. It exposes them to the bone, who they are, what they're doing, how they've done it, how fraudulent it is, that they've literally made themselves guilty for every damn law against humanity that's ever been conceived or written by man.
That's weird.
Okay.
Wow.
So at the bottom of that, there's a one sentence, and they're using it in a different context. I'll go ahead and give it to you now. But this is all you got to do to get out of this thing, literally, is you make a statement that says, I declare under penalty of perjury a jurat. You know, they call it like the penalty of perjury thing. Good. All the way down at the bottom of that document, in the last sentence, it says, I, Dolphin Dave, hereby express my declaration to be a U.S. national and not a citizen of the United States. And you go get it notarized, and you send it to them with or without a passport application. It's preferable to do it with a passport application, because then your new passport will link you as a ID to your new legal personality. And from what we've been told and can surmise, in the back profile, you're listed as someone with diplomatic immunity. Now, we've had examples of this happen to people, okay?
Huh. Wow, this is like Lethal Weapon 2, huh?
Well, I mean, you see, this is where all their power comes from. And once they're confronted with it, now you got to do this specifically to the Secretary of State. He's in this case, he's the lord of the manor, and you can either do it with him with a passport application, or you can do it with him cold. Now, let me plug this for you guys, Dave, okay, and your audience is listening. I've got these two documents that covers this. One is called How to Escape the Matrix, Repatriate, okay, and the other is called How to File a National Affidavit. All right. And you can request those two documents. If just send an email, I'll send it to Dave. I don't know if you've got places you post stuff like that with the show. But if you wanted to send an email to me, our radio broadcast show address is Radio Ranch, all one word, no space, Radio Ranch at mail, mail.com. Radio Ranch at mail.com, and put up in the subject line Matrix Docs. And I'll shoot those back to you, and I'll shoot you back a link to that full 2.5 hour interview with Deanna, because even though we still cover it on the surface, you can see already from what we've done here, there's a lot to cover here. Okay. And everything we're talking about, I can dig in for an hour on the feudal system. Okay. But I'm trying to give you the highlights today to see if what I know is that if you're the right person and you're presented with this information properly, you can't shake it. Okay? It grabs you and you can't get it to let go.
Yeah, fascinating. Yeah, absolutely.
Now, I would say this. I've been doing it for 11 years. Had a radio show regularly, daily for many years, you know. I've never had one report of any blowback from the federal government of anybody that's ever done this. Anybody. Not once. And if there was blowback from it, I don't know everybody that's filed these things, read the book, heard my show or anything, but I do know this. If somebody had a problem because of it, I'd be one of the first to know. Would you guys agree with that?
Sure. Yeah. And you know, Daryl,
not one.
Daryl seems to be quite a fan of your work, man.
Yeah. Well, Daryl's gone through it. And see, here's what happens is the power that you were supposed to be given by God at birth was stolen from you at birth through this suppressive system that you never knew and then you agreed to. And as you remove yourself from it and you start going back and redoing these things, every time you undo one of those knots in your mind, you get a little more slice of reality. Okay? And that is empowerment. And then what happens is you'll want to go, you'll have to interface with the federal government. And you're going to go, God, I don't know if they're going to ding me or whatever. And you go in and they do exactly what you want them to do. okay? And you go, well, I'll be damned. Now you start looking for them, okay? And all this is just constant re-empowerment, and you're just being re-empowered the way that our Creator meant for you to be empowered from the start that was stolen from you through this fraud. Now, that's what's going on.
That's fascinating. Roger, maybe you could tell us what made you leave the United States?
Funny. When Obama... I'd lived in Atlanta for many years. My base and all this was in Atlanta. My wife passed away. I wanted to move back. I moved back with my mom there in Florida. Lived alone in the big family house, knowing I was probably going to go somewhere, but I didn't know where at that point. And I spent 5 years there. And one day when Obama was running for office, I've had this happen twice in my life. Have you, any of y'all had the little voice come to you?
Sure.
All right. Well, I had the little voice come to me, and it said, you need to get out. And I went, oh, geez almighty, you know. This is the second time it's happened, okay. And I go, well, I've never traveled. I can't speak a second language. Where the hell would I go? And I dispelled it. And a couple of weeks later, it came back again, said the exact same thing. And I had a friend from my days in the record business. My main career is in the record industry. And I had a friend used to work for the Beatles, actually. And he had some land in Argentina and had been trying to get me to come down there. And I said, well, I'll just go down. I'd seen a TV program on Argentina on Globetrekkers. I don't know if that program's still on PBS or not. It used to be. And they were real close to where his land was. And I said, well, shit, I'll just move. And I did. So I was down there for 9 years before I moved up here, Dave.
Oh, wow.
And see, Jack and I used to know each other in Atlanta. He was in our Patriot group in Atlanta. He's been seeing me give these presentations since I didn't know anything but the tax side, you know? And he heard me on a radio show one night and got a hold of me, and I said, well, I'll come up and visit you. And I came up here and really liked it and, you know, as it ended up moving.
So how were things different in Argentina versus Ecuador?
Night and day. Culture's different. A lot of the words are different. Attitudes are different. Climate's different. I mean, you know, I'll tell you one thing. I sure miss beef and the wine. I lived out in wine country over by the Andes in Mendoza province. And it was a lot of Americans down there, a lot of American alcoholics down there.
Yeah.
Listen, there's a bunch of Americans that are down there for one variety of wine called Malbec. Have you ever heard of Malbec?
Sure, of course.
Well, that's one of the only stands in the world left of Malbec grapes is down in that area. And Argentina's a very interesting place. I enjoyed my time there. Ended up spending a good bit of time in Buenos Aires and connecting with the expat group down there. Fabulous city of Buenos Aires. If you ever get the opportunity to go, go. It's fantastic.
Yeah, very European.
Yeah, all of Argentina is, actually. I mean, it's just incredible. I mean, it's not that it's so chock full of nice people. You got to watch your step, and I wouldn't get much out of downtown, you know. But, man, it's a cool place. A lot of culture, a lot of old, wonderful buildings. You know, parts of it are called the Paris of South America and stuff like that. And spending a good bit of time in Uruguay. Have you been down there yet, any of you?
I haven't been to Uruguay, no.
Uruguay's pretty nice. I mean, really, it's got a lot of nice attributes to it. Spent not much time in Chile, but a lot of Americans like Chile.
What made you decide to go from Argentina to Ecuador, though?
Well, Jack, you know.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I came up here and visited Jack for a month, and he was kind enough to put me up in his house and give me a place to stay, and I walked around a lot and liked it, you know, and I went back to Argentina, and it was after Christmas, so that's their summer, see? And it in the summer there, it gets up to about 105, maybe 110 degrees. All right. And I'm sitting there with no air conditioner with a fan in front of a fan going, man, I liked that Ecuador. It wasn't like this up there. And so I just decided to move. It was time for a change. I'd had a lot of, I had some really, really exacerbating things happen to me when I was down there. I was in a very, very, very bad car accident where there were fatalities and it was my fault. Okay. And so I had to go through all of that crap for about 4 years. So not a pretty picture, but it came out all right. And out of it came this, the book and the message I'd been trying to get out for so long. And it's like God opened the door through the accident, actually. So maybe there's some blessings that were involved with it.
Wow.
Pretty heavy experience. I would tell you this, that I was told that a picture of the car I was driving was on the front page above the fold of every newspaper in Argentina. And the headline was, "It's a miracle this guy is alive."
Wow. So what happened? How did the accident occur?
I dozed off at the wheel and faded over the center line. With a family in it. Yeah, just terrible situation.
Tragic. Yeah, tragic.
Yep, no fun, boy. And down there, you're in a new culture, you're a gringo. You just killed almost an entire, wiped out an entire family, and you don't speak the language. Yeah, you try and go through that little scenario, guys.
Jeez. Wow, that's heavy. That's really heavy. So you've been in South America, what, 15 years then?
About 12 and a half, going on 12. 13, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Roger, I really appreciate you coming on. We're down to the last couple of minutes, and I really hope we can get you to come back on again, because obviously we just scratched the surface of what you're up to. Maybe you could give us some final thoughts here, man.
Well, I'll just say that if this, any of what you've heard has touched you, that I would encourage you to follow up on it. And I know everybody's immediate thought is, like you were saying, I believe Chris was saying, when they kick your door down and all that stuff. And there may be a point when it gets to that. But at that point, like I said, we'll all know what the rules are. Okay. And right now they recognize this, and they have. And I'll tell you what, it's the only thing I've ever seen anybody attach or confront them with where they sit there and stand totally mute. The only thing, they've tried to send out a couple of what I call bluff letters to see if you know your stuff and they can fool you again, okay? But if you understand the basics of what's going on, they can't do that. And anybody that's ever received one of theirs that rebutted it, got their paperwork, their passport, or whatever. We got a new black guy on this hanging around the show that's up in around Greensboro, North Carolina, that's got a custom tag on a really nice BMW and drives around with nothing but a passport card as his identification. Has been stopped 3 times in 2 states. Gives him the passport card. They come back and give it to him and say, "Go on, have a nice day." Okay.
Wow. That's wild.
You can talk to him. His name's James. You can get him to tell you the stories. You want to come on our show. It's real easy. We've got kind of a board like this. We use Jitsi. And all the contact stuff and the archives and all that information is at the back of both of these 2 pages. Okay? The Matrix document and the other. And, Dave, I'll send those to you in Skype right after we're off here. Okay?
Oh,
and then
great.
If anybody else wants them, Radio Ranch, all one word, at mail.com, and just put Matrix Docs in, and I'll be more than happy to send them back to you.
Great, and I really hope we can get you to come back on. And, Roger, I believe we're going to be meeting each other in person this coming Tuesday.
Are you coming down? I didn't know which one. I hope so, Dave.
I sure am. I'm coming down there with Big Wally.
Okay, good enough. Well, I look forward to meeting you and Big Wally both. I hear
right on.
He's a pretty wild guy.
Yeah, Wally's Jack. A friend of Jack. So,
yeah, that's what he told me.
Should be good.
But listen,
okay,
well,
that's
guys,
it.
Thanks for having me, and I hope I provoked.
Thank you, Roger. Really nice to meet you, sir.
Okay, pleasure. Igual.
Take care. Okay.
Okay, ciao.
Thanks for everyone listening, and until next week, take care. Bye-bye.